parents have an incredible talent for taking the nebulous, self-aggrandizing cloud we build around ourselves and what we do, and just cutting through it to find the core value or the smaller reality within. Such was the case with my father, where we were driving a few medical errands, just taking him from hospital to doctor for his usual checkups, and somewhere in there, he asked me, "The data you're getting, how much of it are you really getting? Of everything coming out, isn't that like a percentage of a percentage of a percentage of what's being created? What's even the goal here?" And it suddenly occurred to me, perhaps I haven't gone into some of the fundamentals of what I believe in and what the place I work for believes in. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to William Hearn, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. It didn't take me long to have an answer for my father. In terms of the amount of data that's coming into the Internet Archive, I know what the current number is, even if it changes from day to day. It's roughly 25 terabytes of data. That includes everything, stuff being pulled in by the Wayback Machine, by special scraping projects we have going, and stuff that's being uploaded by partners and users, where they're adding new books and software objects and texts into the archives stacks for immediate access and download. From those 25 terabytes, we then generate a few more terabytes as we create derivatives. It's one thing to upload a 15 gigabyte video file, but we probably want to create a 1 gigabyte MP4 so that people can play it streaming on browsers. Or perhaps we take a bunch of raw TIFF scans and turn them into a readable book. And, of course, everything is being backed up at least once and probably a few times in various parts of the country and on various machines. But we'll get back to the 25 terabytes of data that's coming in daily. It might help a little to know how the historical weirdness of Internet Archive came about in the first place. I've told this story many different times, but I'm not sure I've done so on this podcast. Brewster was working on a startup called Alexa Internet, and it was a Nielsen ratings for websites. It would enable you to find out the ranking of a website. Was it the 35,000th largest website of its kind, or was it the 10th most browsed science website? And on top of that, it had historical information as to how the browser changed over time. One side effect of this was that all of the websites were being logged and being copied so that they could do analysis on them. Initially, it was pretty basic data. They weren't even taking images. And then over time, they increased it to images and music and then other forms, including scripts. In this way, Alexa Internet wasn't unlike any other startup that was working with websites. There were a lot of companies analyzing the web and downloading parts of it for analysis, including what became search engines like Lycos and AltaVista and eventually Google and Bing. All of these sites were building off of data being uploaded and changed constantly. There were two things that made Alexa Internet a little bit different than these other endeavors. One of them was that Alexa Internet sold out to Amazon for Amazon stock, making Brewster very, very independently wealthy. Another thing that happened was that the data from Alexa Internet was kept for years and years in its various original states. And it was an idea of a number of persons, including Brewster, that there might be some sort of way to make information about this archive available again. The idea of the Internet Archive had existed from 1996, and it was going to present some form of these old websites. Most of these were working out, frankly, in art projects. I have a very good memory of being in my apartment in Central Square in Cambridge around 1997, and I was working for a video game startup, and I read an article about this project being done by some guy named Brewster, a name I thought was way out there. And he was talking about building an exhibit of websites, that the entire web was interesting enough that we should present it as a work of art. As part of this, he was building up a collection of websites that he would then gift over to the Library of Congress so they would always have a record of the World Wide Web. It's important to note that during this time, Brewster gave a number of interviews in which he used the phrase, "This could be as much as a terabyte of data." So in this environment, Brewster had a building in the Presidio in San Francisco and had a number of people working with him to maintain this data and interact with it and figure out how to acquire more of it. And part of the deal with Alexa Internet was that its data would be shared with this nonprofit Internet Archive. Around this time, Brewster is working with a whole range of ideas about what this is all going to be, and he registered a number of domain names, including archive.org, softwarearchive.org, musicarchive.org, and a whole range of others, most of which actually still work, and also which get around a number of censorship blocks. The idea of making any part of this corpus immediately available back to people wasn't on the menu for a number of years. He seriously thought that it would be something you would check out, that you would go to a place like the Library of Congress and request yahoo.com for a number of years and then be handed a terminal where you could browse through it. It was only around 2001, 2002, that a number of engineers and Brewster cooked up what we think of as the Wayback Machine. Once the Wayback Machine came online, of course, it was a killer operation. People wanted to find out what websites used to be like. They could look things up that were gone, and it did a pretty good job of presenting these old websites in a format that people could understand. You would type in a specific URL, and from that, you would be given a list of snapshots, and then you would find out what a website used to look like within reason. Now, there's two ways this could have gone. Like the internet-connected coffee machine, or the MIT or Stanford Coke machines, or a variety of webcam sites, this could have been a small byway on the World Wide Web that you visited for a relatively small data set, and you thought it was interesting, and then you would move on. And probably the site would fall into disrepair, and it would just fade away. People might remember sites like Deja News and the Internet Underground Music Archive, which contained vast realms of data for the time, and then over time got bought out by other companies or shut down. And it would have just been a relic of the old web. But we had things happen. First of all, the Internet Archive started moving into not just websites, but into Grateful Dead recordings and old educational films, and then ultimately into books. Brewster was a person who loved books. He had named his firstborn son after his favorite book font. This was a guy who had the motive and the opportunity to turn the archive into a living, growing archive of data. Combining that with his Amazon money, he was able to keep it going through lean times and bring in more and more data from different websites. The numbers have gone up and down over the years. Some years you could have a lot of ingestion from websites, and then other years they scaled it back a little bit, only grabbing things every few months, mostly depending, again, on costs, austerity, dealing with various issues that had technical problems, or even the cost of disk drives affecting things. By 2009 and 2010, the site is in a pretty good equilibrium. Then they hired me. Among the things that I was doing, and I've given many different podcast episodes about that, I was the harbinger for a wider, larger, more data-intense group of people who were going to upload things to the archive going forward. At the time that I joined, I caused problems with the engineers when I started uploading 5 gigabyte items into the archive. By the time I was doing 50, 100, and 200 gigabyte items, there was more suffering to be had, and we are now in a situation where 2 to 4 terabyte items have shown up occasionally here and there. Millions of people are hitting the site every day, and the demand has not gone down in the least. There have been incredible amounts of improvements to the Wayback Machine. The version numbers aren't really something the public sees, but there's been multiple major revisions in how the website plays back old websites. It's got all sorts of names internally, but when you go to web.archive.org, there is some sort of application there that you are accessing that lets you see reports and readouts for different website histories and lets you find where major changes have happened, or sourcing out where exactly the web scrape came from, which helps a lot when your sources are no longer just Alexa Internet and the Internet Archive, but the Library of Congress, the archive team, and a whole other range of groups that are producing their own web scrapes that are showing up. Ever present in all of this, in all of the innovation, in all of the different fields that we're moving into software and large amounts of community television and thousands upon thousands of hours of radio being pulled in daily, comes the inevitable, and in my case, parental question. Where does this end? Where are you going to hit a limit? When are you going to find out that there's something you can't take? And what is this all even for, says my dad. You know, here's what I told him. Currently in society, we are producing an enormous amount of data, but a lot of that data is what I would call ambient. It's data that is being produced because we have created listeners and signal readers and asked people to do things they used to do organically through digital means, whether it's instant messaging, tracking your fitness, talking to people about different ideas, taking pictures, creating stories or descriptions of what you're up to. All of these things used to be in diaries and photographs or just shouted across a diner when you saw somebody you didn't expect, or finding out that a favorite band is playing in your local club and you're going to go there, or even sitting around in your club and enjoying whatever bands happen to be playing on open mic night. All of these things have now been digitized to some extent. All of the descriptions of them, all of the people talking to each other, all of this is now becoming data. Not just gigabytes, not just terabytes, but petabytes and petabytes of data created ambiently from just people living their lives. So let's just set that aside for a moment, the fact that we know if somebody slips in a really funny way and somebody else records it, that millions of people are going to be looking at that. Instead, let's turn over to business, commerce, and education, where you have a whole bunch of data being created just in the functioning of money changing hands and individuals asking for or being given information. If you mail somebody at work to ask them when you're going to go to a meeting, you generate a few megabytes of data, both in terms of the request being made and then copies being made and then other people having it added to their calendars. This adds up in terms of data. Same thing if someone sends a report, it gets all over the servers. It ends up being transferred to other servers. There's all sorts of ways to make this more optimized, to compress it, but you're generating data. Same thing when you go to a college and you have your college grades being tracked, or your teachers are asking you for reports and you're mailing them in, or you get to use your phone for a music class to do some sort of performance that the teacher evaluates, or when your parents record you performing something at the play. You can see it just becomes infinite in every direction. We are generating all of this data all of the time. And is the Internet Archive going to get all of that? No. Absolutely not. The Internet Archive, and you can quote me on this, is not going to get the totality of all data produced by all of humanity for all of time. Not going to do it. Not going to do it. Definitely not on the agenda. So pulling back from that, we start to ask questions. And so the question that we get to ask is, what data should, if possible, be saved? Somewhere along here, you start moving into a Maslow's hierarchy of data importance. There are events that happen, there are things that are said, and there are creative works that I think most people in some way would recognize should be saved. Classic cinema, world-renowned books, essays and statements made at important events or political or private events that represent humanity in its various forms. Statements of independence, of positions, of debates that then have reverberations throughout society. Some of these come in the form of audio recordings or shaky video. Some of them are professionally packaged works that come from corporate environments. Other ones are unintentionally thrust into the zeitgeist, never to be considered anything less than critical, like the Zapruder film, or snapshots taken during disasters that become the cover images and the memories of people going on for decades, maybe for centuries. Moving on from those, you start to ask questions about what can you easily get versus what is more difficult to get. There are multiple examples across the last 100 years of people going with recording devices and asking people questions about things that have happened very recently, whether it's traumas or triumphs, where they stick a microphone in someone's face and we, 50 or 60 or 70 years later, get to hear these voices alive and with emotion describe something that still has meaning to us or that we didn't know about and in a way we can use. These anthropological creations are almost random. It depends on somebody recognizing that something should be grabbed and going ahead and interviewing people or recording background or being in the back of the room when the noise is made that is going to change the world or change minds. It's all kind of arbitrary. And as technology has gotten better and better, we have been able to save it as compressed audio, as captured transcripts, and have it continue to play an important part in our lives. So some of the data that is flooding into the Internet Archive day by day is material that, in various ways, has survived the past. It's stuff that was recorded or put into a print magazine or given out in a flyer, and somebody turned it into a digital file and is uploading it to the archive. That is, it's very surviving to the modern age of digitization means it's going to, in some way, live even longer. On an average day, dozens of different periodicals and zines are being uploaded into the archive, and they all represent curation of whatever scene or society those periodicals came from. Whether we're truly capturing the society that these came from is another question, but it certainly doesn't hurt to have them. So setting aside those pre-made capsules of times past that we're lucky enough to be able to add, we go into what coming out of today's data stream is going to be saved. Well, obviously, we're still saving websites. Due to consolidation and various other factors on the internet, there are less websites out there than there used to be. I mean, sure, there's probably a whole bunch more domains, but they tend to leak into each other and they tend to use other services on the back end. So even though there's many more domain names to download, the actual difference between them is sometimes very small indeed. Very few people have a personal website now. They tend to have a personal Twitter account or a personal Instagram account. So the challenge of dealing with a whole different range of websites is reduced. The biggest problem, of course, is walled gardens. It's extremely hard to download a lot of Facebook material and play it back. It's always a big deal trying to get things from YouTube because they constantly change how they encode things and how they present them, and none of them are interested in sharing with us. But we do it. If a YouTube link is mentioned on a Twitter account, the Internet Archive, in general, will grab a copy of that video. There are a lot of Twitter accounts being grabbed daily by the Internet Archive. A massive panoply of news and media sites are being grabbed multiple times a day. And, as we've revealed recently, every single outgoing link from Wikipedia. These aren't a comprehensive grab of every website, every piece of data going through the internet. But they do represent, in some way, a living idea of where humanity seems to be aiming its focus. And it's growing. A new petabyte of added data to the Internet Archive used to cause a celebration at the office. Now it just represents a new load of data coming in on a regular basis. I wouldn't say we consider it unspecial, but we don't really have the time to interrupt what we're doing every single time it happens. So the answer that I had for my dad, who wondered how hopeless the inherent task of the Internet Archive was that it's the hopeless endeavor of any archive, of any collecting of memories, of any chronicle of the human spirit. It is both representative and exclusive. It is both comprehensive and a tiny sliver of all that was. It is incredibly joyous and unbelievably distressing how much and how little we get. And I think while we could really dwell on everything that we are not achieving, if you really look at what the archive is trying to accomplish here, we are dedicating ourselves, dedicating our lives to taking a reasonably okay, fuzzy snapshot of the goings-on of this strange little species living on this weird little rock off in an arm of the galaxy in a universe it can never totally comprehend, but that it wakes up every day and takes a shot at it. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Mark Pilgrim, Forrest Fuqua, Scott McRae, Scott Roseanne, and Simon Morgan, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt.